Hi, and welcome to Decoding AQ, helping you to learn the tools, mindsets, and actions to thrive in an ever-changing world. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Decoding AQ. I have a very good friend, Jason Slater, who's joining us today.
Good afternoon.
Hi. It's great to see your face. For those that are watching this on YouTube, we'll see it as well. But Jason, you are the head of financial management at Unido. Yeah. Is your current guise at Unido, because we'll get into it a bit more of your journey, which, as I understand, is it 19 years today?
Or 19 maybe? Years almost to the day, Ross, yes.
Fantastic. So why don't you give us just a little bit of background, because we first met actually when you were in a different role at Unido in the communications department, but your time goes further back than that. So give us a little bit of your background from your perspective of what's got you here.
Sure, yeah. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me today. My career started way back actually in the nuclear industry back in the UK. I spent near on 9 years working in mainly in the finance department there. And then I moved into a relatively small, I would say, IT company, Norwegian based, as a management consultant. And I worked with them for 3 years. And one of mainly looking after the public sector, basically helping organizations change in a way to introduce new business processes, predominantly around finance, logistics, HR, etc. And it just transpired that one of our clients was the UN, based here in Vienna. I was always very keen to explore and to get myself outside of the UK. So I was asked if I would be interested to come and support them. So myself and three others joined the team here. And we spent a couple of years basically commuting from Vienna, myself, back home. And it was around the time, as you may recall, that the euro was being introduced. So it's quite interesting that the UN at the time was one of the first to adopt the euro as its actual reporting currency. And that's the area that we supported them on. So I came here for a few years as a management consultant, as the UN as my client. But then as a client, they approached me for various reasons, and I decided to come for 6 months. And as you just mentioned, here we are 19 years down the road.
2 decades down the road. You shouldn't have been that good, Jason, and then maybe you wouldn't have been approached.
Yeah, so here we are now 19 years down the road, having had a long journey through working in IT, being the head of systems, then a very, very interesting role after that, which was basically working in overseeing a huge implementation of change management, but also implementing an ERP, an enterprise resource planning system, which 10 years ago was really the thing to do, particularly in the UN.
Yeah, huge beast of a project, I bet.
Huge. We did. I was responsible for overseeing the largest integrated implementation of an ERP within the smallest budget and the tightest time frame. And I'm proud to say that we at Unido succeeded in both of those. We did it on time, and we did it considerably less than the resources that were given to us by our member states. But that led me into business transformation, change management. So it took me in a slightly different direction from the finance. So I managed that, head of business transformation for 3-4 years. And then when myself and you got introduced, I was requested to take on the role of head of communications, but with a very specific mandate, which was to expand, Unido's outreach. But that was at the time where, digital transformation was just coming into its fore. Social media, use of how do you get yourself out there and tell a story on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, further afield, looking at China, WeChat, Weibo, etc. So extremely fascinating couple of years in my career, one that I never anticipated, but having now looked back, understanding people like yourself more, rather than the numbers, but also there's a story that needs to be told. And that now brings me to where I am now, which is, heading our financial management area here at Unido, which is primarily about support, providing financial management support to our 860 projects in 120 countries. Predominantly those are in very poor developing countries, which is about helping them with industrial development aligned to the global goals. So yeah, that's my 19 years within a couple of minutes.
Within the company. It's fascinating when you look back and what is it that actually burnt on the mind? You know, what do you remember of these sort of key transitions or key events? And often it's so, when you're in it, it's just incredibly overwhelming and equal levels of stress and excitement. But then when you look back and you see the achievements of you and the organization of, you know, being able to take on such large projects with limited resources and still be alive at the end, you know, and still be smiling is real testament to you as a character, but also as an organization in what is possible when given the ambition to do something, that they can do incredible things, which is amazing. I mean, what was perhaps some of the hardest challenges in that big project that you mentioned of implementing an ERP piece? What were some of the highlight challenges that you faced?
The technical side of it was actually the area that became the most straightforward. The largest challenge in that was the change management aspects of it. And that was, I think then we talked very much about cultural change, you know?
Yep.
You know, and we're talking about an era where certainly within the UN, I don't say in the private sector, where things like, you know, electronic approvals, workflow, four eyes principle, people being able to see, bringing a level of transparency to what people are actually doing in their daily work. So that for me was one of the biggest challenges. And from that was getting a level of engagement and understanding that engagement, we say it's great, you have top management support, but it's got to be from top all the way down to those people who are actually the ones, I would say, really doing the day-to-day tasks and work. So that for me was been one of the challenges that I would say, getting it done on time within budget, that's heads down, get on with it. But you've got to have, if people don't come along with you on that journey, you're not going to succeed. And I'll be very open. I reflect on it now and look at lessons learned. The aftermath, the ripple effect of what we did back then, it took us 2-3 years to calm that situation down because you've brought a lot in very quickly. You've got people with you, but to really, really institutionalize that change that you brought about, it took quite some time. So I would say that was one of the, by far for me, and I think that is consistent throughout whatever you do.
Yeah.
The technology is there and you can embrace it. And some of us can, a handful of us. But if you want that to be something that's mainstream within your organization or within your company, then clearly the people aspect of it is critical.
It's a tough one. And it's that forming, storming and norming kind of process, isn't it? You know, and as you mentioned, the ripple effect on people that might do it through compliance, but then is it sustainable afterward of somebody? Does it become, you know, the normal way of doing things?
I always say also, if I may just on this, I always look at, if I look at myself, you know, I'd see my career has took mainly two aspects. There is the finance side and there is the IT. So, which is straightforward. There is money in, money out. And if it's IT, it's primarily binary, you know, it's very straightforward, but there's a totally different aspect to it when it comes to people and managing and working with people, et cetera. So, that is the challenge. And it's also an interesting part of it as well.
And I guess from your experience of coming from binary, right, wrong stuff, you know, finance, IT, and then dealing with these strange beings that, you know, aren't binary, that have so many levels of complexity, that what was wrong yesterday can be right today and vice versa, and just the mindsets, behaviors, beliefs, and then when you multiply that by each component of each unit, each person bringing its own bit, and then the dynamics of teams and organizations, it becomes a really complex, challenging beast to deal with.
Completely. And really underestimated, certainly back then, near on 10 years ago. And I don't just talk about what we did here in UNIDO, but at the time, not very long after that, I became the chair of a UN-wide special interest group on, so, you know, UNICEF, the secretariat, all of the people who've done this. And it was one of the biggest consensus that we came to is how on earth to get everybody aligned. I mean, today, and that's one of, you know, our own relationship that we've had over the last few years, people is much more at the fore. Looking at, you sit and say, have you got a team that's adaptable, for example?
Yeah.
It's not something you even came into your, it was not even on your radar 10 years ago. Change management, yeah, make sure that people are trained, make sure we adjust job description. A lot, but it still was on the technical side of it. The soft aspect, I think, was grossly underestimated. And that probably is why there was a huge, huge price tag. I can say openly that the figures are out there that, you know, the UN, when it implemented all of these large enterprise resource planning systems, invested over $1 billion. Mm. $1 billion. That is a phenomenal investment.
Yeah.
Yeah. That the human aspect of it was something that was grossly underplayed throughout. But yeah, we've learned from that.
We do. And I think that's the aspect of, you know, better forward. You know, that when we re-engage on things, is that we understand what do we leave behind and what do we take forward, you know, and the aspect of dealing with human beings and how this has now shaped your career, of lots of these moments of where you as an individual have adapted to new environments, new roles, new tasks, new projects, new objectives, but then also your learnings of now from what might be easier to project manage, easier to deal with, you know, of binary aspects to then the more complex of people. So how, in terms of the organizations are preparing for the sort of pace of change? So that project probably took a long time, you know, and lots of projects historically take a long time to deal with. The larger they are, consequently, it would be a long time to look at them. Mm. What we've been noticing is how so much pressure is to do more with less resource, you know, less time to do those things. Mm. Where are you seeing organizations either within UNIDO or within your projects or clients that you're working with that's really doing that well at speed?
We have a few specific things that we are trying to do now around innovation. I think but within the UN itself is, we have what is referred to as the UN Innovation Network, which is also a very informal network. It is those of us, whatever level you are, from managing to being the people who are being at the very detailed operational level, that you can join this to understand better how you can embrace certain innovation. And I think, as you just mentioned, is working together through a network, enabling you to move much faster than you'd ever done before, and also allow you to fail, but also fail very quickly so that you can then move on. And this is a totally different direction than what I have experienced in the past. You know, I mean, also breaking down silos of working with, you know, I'm now working now on a blockchain project. I always know that I can go to WFP, I can go to UNICEF, who are also 2-3 years down the line. They've been there, done it, they've took those risks, and they're prepared to share what they've done so that we can then advance at a much faster pace. I mean, that's one of the things that I'm seeing now is this collaboration between us, you know? And taking risks with certain innovation to see whether it can work for you, you know, and if it can, how can you ensure that you do it with less resources? What does less resources mean? It means that you have to take risk and that you have to adapt to certain standard practices. Do I have to be so different? Does my, sorry if I give quite a back office example, is my payroll so different in the UN than what's going on? Do I need to invest so much time, effort, and resources? Or do I start looking at how there are, you know, there are shared services out there that could even do that service for me? You know, there are things.
SaaS systems, technology systems.
All those kinds of things. It's a totally different way that we have to now look at the solutions that are in front of us. And because what is your function to do now, particularly in finances? The massive data that we are collecting, but we don't have the skills to drill the data, to analyze the data, to present the data in a way, actually back to the communication side of it, that tells a story, you know? So those are the things that I see. I think there are some great examples out there. I see what UNICEF have been doing around the innovation. I was very, very lucky that last year I was invited to the first ever UN Innovation Network bootcamp. You know, UNIDO presented its project. We learned a lot from it. But the people that I saw next to me, some of the examples of the tools that are being brought to developing countries, QR codes to help when in Burkina Faso for UNFPA when children are born, so that they have an identity, they have a digital identity. You might question, well, really, do you want to give a baby a digital identity? Well, they have an identity now, and what that then helps, and all the subsequent services that they can receive. These are some small but great examples that I have seen.
I want to pick up on a couple of bits there. So this thinking of how to innovate faster is looking with others, collaborating with others so that we can learn from, and so being open to share, whereas historically innovation was about gaining competitive advantage. You know, it was about building something internally that then your R&D was maximized for a commercial activity because nobody else knew it or what you were doing. Whereas I think now that's shifted a lot in terms of your advantage is to share more, to collaborate more. And when we talk about risk, the risk to take a new thing on and to innovate is the equal risk of to do nothing.
Absolutely.
I mean, in a slow moving world, to do nothing, the knock-on effect of that is delayed. Mm. In a fast paced world, to do nothing is maybe an even higher risk for organizations and teams and individuals.
Absolutely. I have behind me the global goals, the 17 global goals, and you know, my organization's mandate is aligned very closely to SDG 9, industrial development, inclusive, sustainable industrial development. But my favorite goal is number 17.
Yeah.
Because 17, without that, without collaboration, without partnerships, without people accepting that you can step in and help others, I don't believe we've got any chance of achieving those or even just fulfilling our day jobs in the next 1, 2, 3 years. It's such a pace. I mean, we'll come on to it, but I can give you again some specific examples of this from my own experience as we go along. Yeah.
And it's a different way of thinking, isn't it, from the traditional kind of transactional service. Here's a brief. Here's the exactly what I'm looking for. Can you meet those specs and we'll engage, to a partnership that's orientated around the result. This is what we're looking for, but we don't yet necessarily know how we're going to achieve it. Yeah. I remember the example of one of the first projects we were doing together, and it was a communications piece, and it was out to member states, and you were looking at introducing VR as a way to introduce the opportunity for member states to see the real work that's going on in remote areas.
Yeah.
Which traditionally was through photographs and text, be that in a brochure or a web. And, you know, this sense of at the beginning, the sort of trepidation for breaking the norm, you know, then, oh, it's not a brochure or VR, isn't that something you experience at the circus? To, you know, then having the courage to do it, put it in the hands and eyes of some of the member states to then just be blown away with how much that engaged them to be connected to that story and emotionally that then led to, you know, positive outcomes. But it takes courage to do things differently, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a very good example that you picked up on there. I mean, I feel in that I was just a facilitator, that I just allowed the team that I had around me to say, go ahead, take a risk. I believed in it.
Yeah, and it was with partnerships.
It was in partnership with the donor. It was with the European Union. They were the ones who actually provided some of the funding, who took the risk and said, let's try this in a totally different way. We was working with one of the local universities here, VU, here in Vienna. And with the government of Armenia, because That's mm-hmm. the specific VR that we did. Actually, it was some local farmers.
It was.
Who realized that, you know, just producing their own, the local produce, but if they came together more of a conglomerate, that ultimately they could bring their goods to a wider distribution market, etc. And it was a very interesting piece. And I think if we can just maybe just, it might be interesting for people to listen to this, to tell the full story, is that, you know, from the project, from what we'd done, from what had been invested, we managed to show, film, see, and actually sit and be with those people that we've supported, seeing the outcomes, so see the delivery of the actual goods to where it goes from their farm in this particular case. And then bringing that all the way back into a very formal general conference like the UNGA setting of member states, of donors, etc. And then putting on them goggles, and some of those very member states then turning and saying, can't we do this on our projects? This is such a fascinating way. I can feel, I can touch what's going on. I don't have to, yes, it's nice to have my brochure, etc., but to really be fully embraced. And if you recall, at the very end of it, we actually took it one step further and we organized for our member states to speak to the actual recipients of the support that had been given through our donor, the European Union, etc. It was,
it was a great story. And
It is.
You know, I had 2 decades of, you know, brand and marketing stuff. I couldn't imagine that kind of result from somebody reading a brochure. You know, sometimes video, you know, really helps because you get that emotional connection of a storytelling for somebody going, ah, I now feel a relationship with that entity, that person, that company, that family. And I'd like to meet or connect. But the immersive nature of that and for, you know, the UN, for many who aren't inside the system, you know, see it in a different eye. Of whether it's advanced, not advanced, relevant, not relevant, but there's pockets of such innovation, such amazing work going on. Mm-hmm. And this challenge of being open to experimentation, being, you know, aware of maybe these new skills and these new opportunities, whether that's software as a system or it's VR, or it's a technological piece, mm-hmm. or whether it's the way in which someone changed the ways they're thinking. I remember first introducing the concept of moonshot thinking to UNIDO and some of the executive leadership team there. And
to the director general.
Director general, indeed.
Yeah. I still remember to the day our director general's quote, I want to be one of those crazy people.
Exactly.
I want to take some risks. Yep.
So out of character, you know, I'd been led to, you know, see this individual and this character through the eyes of the people that were around him. And I often, you know, my bit here, you know, it's actually on my mouse mat, and I'll read it out. And it says, one's destination is never a place, but a new way of seeing things. I go with my eyes wide open to unite, inspire, and accelerate the best of all humanity. And so I remember thinking about that. Okay, I'm going in with my eyes open with this particular character. And it was a big risk you and I both took.
I was more nervous than
you were probably more nervous. I mean, you had more to lose, I guess. You were inside there. I'm coming in as, you know, and you know, I had a bit of you know, history of knowing how it has affected other clients that we'd worked with in this particular fashion of driving innovation and the concept of moonshot thinking being crazy until it's a breakthrough, you know. And a lot of this I got from Peter Diamandis and Singularity University and all of these areas, and introducing it into places where it's totally unexpected. And it could have gone a few ways, right? It could have been I'm thrown out the room and, you know, we haven't talked again, or it went thankfully in a way that's inspired, I think, not just you but many within your teams to have a different mindset, to think very differently about how to deal with change and how to invoke the type of change they want. So tell us a little bit about your experience in Vienna of the crisis in terms of going to remote working as an organization and then coming back. And how did the work that we were involved in, you know, of looking at adaptability, dealing with those things of the teams, how did that impact you and your people in in dealing with it?
Yeah, no, yeah, we went into lockdown on the 16th of March, mm-hmm. Here in Vienna. It was done within a few, you know, literally Friday was notified, by Monday you're working from home. So to put that into context, we have 5,500 UN workers here in Vienna. We are in a compound, and it's, you know, sealed off compound. It is a number of UN agencies, but of course,
describe it a little bit for people who've never been inside, what that looks like. You know, you got 5,500,
yeah,
and this doesn't look like your you know, corporate environment.
Not at all.
So
no.
give us what it looks like, what it feels like when
we all have our own offices. Typically your offices and your windows are almost attached as well to your seniority. Mm-hmm. So I sit here with 5 windows, a slightly larger office than others. Most people,
it's the corner office with the windows that people like.
Yeah. People fight for the corner one, because on the corner one you're allowed to actually request for our logistical support to allow you to open the window.
Wow.
But yeah, this is a building that is a series of, I don't know how to describe, but circular type buildings coming together.
Yeah, sort of horseshoe.
Central rotunda, with everybody basically having their own office. So you're taking people 5,500 from in their own office. And, you know, your interaction in your office is a meeting. There's not a lot of...
Siloed meetings.
Yeah,
everybody together in terms of the cafeteria.
Yeah.
And that's more open plan. But yeah, in terms of the general offices, is an office with a door, knock, bow as you go in, come and sit, you know, and have your meeting.
There is a strong element. We try, and some of us more than others have tried. I know even actually the days of implementing the UGRP, I decided to introduce open plan for the first time in our organization. And people were asking me, why are you sitting with the implementing partner project manager? I says, because if I'm sat alone in my office, I don't know what he's doing and he doesn't know what I'm doing, and we need to speak. And this was the...
It's given us a visual of the environment.
Yeah,
so Nicole came in 16th. We're all working from home now.
Yeah. One small last visual though is all the elevators are bright, the most brightest orange you could ever imagine. Yeah. We should wear sunglasses in the elevator.
Yeah. Maybe my yellow glasses.
Lockdown scenario. So how are you going to get, you've got to, of course, adapt yourself in such a way of how are we going to communicate the team with our clients? Our clients are being internal project managers, member states, external. This is the point, the part of the year, perhaps my least favorite part of the year, but anyway, we have to do it, where we have to produce what we call banks, like statements for all of our member states, hundreds of them. Mm-hmm. And hundreds of them that are typically stamped, signed, officially sent to an embassy, going into things called pigeonholes. So everything is about touch. It is people needing to speak, people needing to leave things. So we have gone from that environment to suddenly we are wherever we are, in our apartments, our houses, whatever. We've got kids around and stuff. So we quickly put in place, actually within 24 hours of the lockdown, we and the Department of Finance had issued a set of standard operating procedures so that everybody had an understanding of how now you can operate.
Was that adapted from existing, or was that created from scratch?
Scratch.
From scratch. 24 hours. Here's our new SOPs.
I mean, you have your foundation and that, have you? But we decided, because you asked me a question there, Ross, about how did we learn certain things about adapting? And there were certain elements that we quickly said, let's use this opportunity to leverage some change, to allow ourselves, how we work to adapt, but also importantly, our stakeholders, how we interact with them. Mm-hmm. So we did do this. We took a few risks here and there.
You could write some new rules.
Yeah. I mean, this may not be something new to people who are listening in, mm-hmm. particularly private sector.
Certainly was for you guys.
Remember what I just said, official seal, signatures. We moved to complete electronic communication with all of our member states and the embassies. we moved to something similar to a kind of a Dropbox type, so that we were sending out statements where they could just pick them up. So official letters, statements, etc. So we moved so quickly into that environment. We needed to engage with our internal stakeholders. So obvious things, get Zoom up and running, yep. Start scheduling briefing sessions. Team, no longer communicate through formal email channels, telephone, etc. Move everything to, you know, social media type,
platforms,
WhatsApp, Slack, whatever. Yep. So we quickly moved into a different way of working, but also to keep ourselves engaged, also tracking what we were doing through COVID-19 in the lockdown, because you've also got to demonstrate your level of productivity. What is the impact? Not just so also measuring that we quickly put that in place so that I can tell you now, it may not mean nothing to an external audience, but I know that my team was always doing 200 consistent tasks per week on certain areas, you know. Wow. So we also managed to collect a lot of data. So very, very interesting period. And I have been back here now in the office for near on 6 weeks. What have I noticed? The benefit, two major things that we've managed to continue. And I have to thank my director for the support on this, that all electronic communication we will maintain with our member states. Wow. That will remain.
So it wasn't just a, we have to do this because we can't do what we're used to. Yeah. You've now established a new and better way because of this.
In ours, the new normal is a good normal. Great. In certain areas. You know, when people refer to post lockdown, there are some very, very positive things. Yep. The way that we interact with our colleagues, I mean, now video conferencing, use of Zoom and other tools is now becoming by de facto the norm. And they're done at a much quicker pace than sitting in a meeting room for 2-3 hours.
Yep.
You know, things are going and they're becoming much more, we're becoming much more results orientated in what we want to get out of those interactions. So I think a lot of positive things so far have been coming out. Our overall productivity as an organization has also not been, considering we are an agency that relies heavily on traveling. And of course, we're not traveling at the moment.
Yeah.
Our overall productivity is only 10% down on what it was 12 months ago. That is not so bad when you're heavily reliant on, you know, a couple of hundred people getting on planes, going out there to the countries and implementing, because they've put in new techniques.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you think that's given people a permission to think differently, that it might be possible that maybe I don't need to go there? I might choose to for other reasons to travel because of an added benefit of being in the physical. But for many of the situations, it's not a required necessity if we can use technology to do that. And how many more things could we do? How many more people could we support? That's if we're right. Not in that downtime of the travel.
And I think what we've moved into is an environment of much stronger trust with the people that are around us, you know, to empower them to do and to get on with certain things. So in this instance now, you know, moving to introducing new tools so that our field operations can move much quicker, giving, you know, empowering them to do some of those things that you may well have relied upon in the past for somebody to fly in from Vienna or what have you. So yeah, no, overall coming out of it, I feel for my own personal area that I'm responsible for, we've used it as an opportunity.
Yeah.
And to break certain things, to change certain things and let that become, in our eyes, the new normal in a positive sense. Yeah.
And, you know, when we see any event, whatever it is, good or bad, to look at it as instead of happened to us, but happened for us. Mm. And that gift to be able to allow new invention, new reimagination of things. And almost like, you know, it was very interesting. It was a small point, but on the SOPs, you know, in terms of your operating procedures, did you adapt and amend what was there? Or did you say, no, we're going to start from scratch? What a difference that made in your thinking to say, we're only putting in things now with the lens of what is needed, not because it existed there before on paragraph 1B.
What is critical now for your operations? What is essential?
Yes.
Strip out what's not. And wow, we yeah, we could really maintain a level of not only productivity, but also bringing in certain innovation. Yeah. And not only we adapting as an organization, but our stakeholders.
Yes. Know? Yeah.
Member states having, I was having regular Zoom calls with member states to go through these statements that I've sent to them electronically. And they said, you know, very openly, when things come through the post and they go into, we are pigeonholes still, you know, there's still these, you might remember.
I read about them, Jason, once. Little boxes. I read about them. Yeah. I saw it in a black and white film one time.
These well, they're still here.
Yeah.
And people don't go to those. You know, it's incredible. Small things here and there made a huge, huge positive impact. So, yeah.
And I think the thing for our listeners to think about is, where is your pigeonhole? You know, if we think about that as just a metaphor, that it's a thing that was helpful yesterday in a era before, whether that's a particular piece of software you have, a particular process you have, or a particular mindset and belief that, no, we can't collaborate with our competitor because they're our competitor. You know, what difference would it make if we said, oh no, that's pigeonhole thinking, you know, of post going into there. Nobody uses that anymore. How radically different would that be if we looked for a partnership that co-elevated? Mm. Was that before a sense of weakness and it was a sense of loss of control to now it's an opportunity? Mm. And the only difference is the way we tell ourselves the story, you know, and our mindsets of approaching that.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, the kind of tips for you in your role and what you've done of embracing these, you've lived and breathed change programs for a long time, and you've built up incredible muscles of thinking, of skills to be able to rally change, drive change, inspire change, ensure it's sustainable. And often you can't see it in yourself. But this balance that I've observed of you between, you know, absolute clarity and direction for people to then openness for collaboration of how they might solve something. Mm. And I think that's really strong leadership, of the balance of knowing when somebody needs to go, no, there's a fire. The exit is this way. We're not going to collaborate and decide 10 different ways we're going out the building. We're going that way. Mm. And other times, there's a new thing here. We're going to look at inventing it and collaborate there. I think that's one key aspect, is knowing the different dynamics of leadership in different change environments and circumstances are important. In terms of other tips that you might have of what you've seen in your own team, or some of the, you've talked lots about the member states or other organizations, what things would you recommend or suggest people could do to help them adapt in this new, very fast-paced level of change?
When I look now what we are trying to achieve, we haven't even spoke about this bit yet, this project we're starting, is that I really believe that you've got to set yourself a clear vision. Mm-hmm. You have to have, we talk in with us, our moonshot.
Yep.
You've got to make sure that's beyond what you can touch. So it's something you really, really, really strive for. Get yourself on that. You'll find quickly that when you have that, because it is something that is what most people will aspire to when you communicate.
It has to be compelling. It really,
you know, you gain momentum. You gain you will have people that will want to join you on that journey. You know, we see that in most things when you're looking at what people, when people set these aspirations, and the people that join you, you've got to give them some trust. You've got to give them some trust around you. You mentioned something before about giving a direction. You've got to do that as a leader, but you've got to also allow your team to embrace what is there. And
the squiggly route to there.
Yeah. I once somebody showed me something, and they called it the roots theory, you know? And I had no clue. They showed this tree and these roots, and I thought, what is this? You know, we have processes, and it goes like this, and processes of, you know, they follow a certain sequence. And they said, a tree with its roots will always find a way. It'll always find a way to grow. The difference is, how do you want that tree? Where do you want it to grow? You know, so that's the thing that I learned from that aspect, is that, you know, you can tell people this is the direction and you go along it, but you will not necessarily succeed. And I think that gaining consensus and having a team around you that trust in their own ability, they can have a trust in you to guide them, but also in their team members, you can make a major, major difference. That's the thing that I feel that I would pass on to anybody is. And where we are going now with the level of change that's coming at us for what we could perhaps absorb, you have to do that collectively. Mm. You cannot sustain that on your own or even on your own in teams. You know, so that is the thing that I, and you know, even today, one of my moonshots that I talked about after I worked with you a few years ago, and when I came into finance, I kept that in my mind. And I said, and I'm linking it back to member states and efficiency saving and everything. I said, my vision, my moonshot is in 4 years, 5 years from now, my entire reporting to our member states is tokenized on blockchain. Now, starting with that. Mm-hmm. Now, here today, we will hopefully in the next 1-2 months sign a partnership with some innovators from Germany, including the government. I don't pay for the software. It's open source because they want to collaborate with us.
Exactly
right. You know, so, yeah. You know, giving very, very specific examples to what you're referring to, yeah. About some of the things that you can, you find that by that collaboration, that there are like-minded people who do want to step in, who do want to support you. My vision, I believe, will achieve fully 4 or 5, but I'll still give it a go.
Yeah.
It's great to know now that not only within our ecosystem, that going outside, bringing in additional partners, they want to support. I said, how do we engage? How are we going to formalize this arrangement? Let's write a letter. You know, let's have a letter and we'll work together on it. So it's
so refreshing, isn't it? To a lot of organizations and companies that have been looking at how do they exploit the assets they currently have? How do they increase the value time and curve for that? Which is different to what we're talking about here of imagining something that doesn't exist yet. And that becomes a magnet and a beacon for people who care about that same thing, who can come with their capability to the cause. And that is for some, it's a really enriching, energizing experience. Mm. But on the same side, for others, that's incredibly scary and different and difficult. You know, those that can do this imagination stuff that allows this collaboration that with just a letter, you can get going. Whereas before, the amount of, we need the specs, we need the protocol, we need everything lined up before we say yes. How do those two worlds exist? Can they exist, or do they need separate playgrounds, separate environments to thrive in a wider system of movement of all? What's your view on that kind of structure and organizational structure for radical innovation?
Okay, this is my own personal view is that I'm a believer that in order to, you should allow innovation to thrive. You should, if, and I know this from experience, ERP, huge, bringing in an elephant, trying to get everybody on board. I said to you, 3, 4, 5 years, you're still working with it. I'm a great believer that if you can isolate and let something thrive, let it grow, almost take it as if it's a startup, even within your organization. Let them not worry about the institutional structure, etc., and just give them that playground to work and to try and to see if something can. If it can, once you've piloted it, you look, you bring it in. Can I scale it? How could I scale it? Let's maybe target one group of team, one country, whatever. That's how I would see that you take this from the seed, let the seed grow, let it have the confidence of knowing that.
Dream big, start small, and don't get het up about how to scale until you've even proved that the seed works.
Yeah, don't worry about that. Don't worry about it. No, that's the conversation I had this morning when I ran a workshop with our German counterparts. We agreed, let's just work together closely, 5 people. That's it. then we go here, then we go here, and then eventually, you know,
builds that confidence. You know, you have the courage, small little teams, and it ripples out. I've got last couple of bits before we wrap up, and it kind of links to a lot of what we've been talking about. Of, I've been fascinated around innovation and adaptability for some time, and what motivates different people to do that, to innovate, to adapt. Mm-hmm. In terms of you as an individual, or whether it's your team or organization, what is it that's driving that motivation to innovate and adapt? What is it for you?
I would say I can talk on behalf of most of my colleagues, friends, acquaintances within my environment. Is for us, it's very clear that we want to make a difference. And that difference is something that's far-reaching and extremely positive. You don't leave the private sector and management consultancy because you're joining the UN to have a career of becoming a CEO or whatever. You come here because, you know, you're with a bunch of like-minded people who really have certain things in their mind that they want to change. I have behind me the 17 goals, something that was adopted. These are the things that motivate us. These are the things that we strive towards as individuals, as teams, as an organization. Outside of the organization, we see that there are people also have that same drive. We're moving, I hope we're moving into a way of thinking in terms of more sustainable. We have to rethink even our economic models. We've seen that after what's gone on in COVID-19. We have to rethink.
The collective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And interestingly, you know that you think you may want to make a difference, particularly within the UN environment, but then you start reaching out to the private sector. There's a common theme across, and I think we all have that now, that we've all reached a point now where we want to leverage what is there, whether it be through innovation or our ability to adapt, but actually we're striving for a common goal. Really, that's what I see at the moment.
And it's we the have moonshots. This... It's the global goals.
And
innovation and adapting are just the roots.
We might not achieve those by 2030, but I still think it's like a moonshot. It might be that we were shooting for 2050, but we'll be a damn way along the line by 2030 to making and putting in place a lot of those changes for the next generations that are coming, you know, because they...
We've moved the needle.
Yeah, exactly. But significantly.
On the things that matter. Significantly.
Yeah, hopefully.
That's great. And in terms of... anyone who's listening who hasn't come across UNIDO's work, but they might be in their networks, in their connections, that thinking, oh, I'm curious about that, of what is it you actually do of supporting these, you know, developing countries that are evolving their industrial models. And you mentioned about the farmer, you know, the cheese farmers and things, and helping them scale. How can people engage with UNIDO that might never have done something like that, but are now curious, maybe a little bit interested? What's the route in, if any of our audience are curious to find out more? What's the best way? And I want a better answer, Jason, than just visit our website. Is there a specific bit in there that you can navigate with insider knowledge of where this is where you might need to start to see if it's relevant and there might be an opportunity?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Beyond visiting our website.
Yeah, that's the traditional answer.
But no, we actually do have a partnership team. We have a partnership team that is actually in place. I'm assuming most of the audience out there may be coming from being startups, entrepreneurs, working in the private sector, etc. Mm-hmm. We have a partnership team in place that can explain how you can get yourself involved with us as an organization. And not only looking to work with us in industrial development in terms of, you know, you come and work along our side, but how we can then put you in contact as well with our beneficiaries that you might want to provide some support to,
There is amazing capabilities in there of years and years worth of data and statistics. I remember getting these fat annual statistic, you know, books that you guys have been keeping for years and years and years. And all of these things that exist, whether it's capabilities, connections, member states, there's a wealth of opportunity in there. It just takes some curiosity to go and have conversations and go and discover.
Yeah, and absolutely.
From my experience, you know, the collaborations, the removal of some of the red tape and barriers, if you find the right people, you can get some stuff done. And that's exciting.
We have, Ross, we have some very, very exciting partnerships that we've had in place with people in the private sector. You'd be very surprised from working with Volvo for a number of years, working with Hewlett Packard, working with Illy Cafe and all different types of areas and what have you from at different levels. And, you know, our role here as a specialized agency is, it's ultimately about creation of jobs, I would say. Green jobs. So it's looking at doing things in a different way, because industrialization can have some very negative connotations to those of us, certainly people like myself, born in Manchester from the first, you know, it's a different world that we're operating in now. And that's, so working with, contacting us, reaching out to myself, for example, I'm more than happy to pass on anybody to our partnerships team, and they can give you some very specific ways that you can either work with us or not, but we can put you in contact with people in those countries that you may feel that you want to help, and pass on some of your own expertise and your own knowledge that can help them ultimately.
I think, you know, the mandate, just to wrap it up, of creating jobs, there is a future of a huge requirement of that as we all are transforming and transitioning, where we need reskilling and upskilling to an entirely different world. And every industry, every organization is going to be feeling that pressure of the restructuring and how do they shift that. And from my own personal experience of the UN, how I saw it before I went inside was different to then going inside. And if I can encourage people to relook and help reimagine, and under the guise of partnerships, I'm certainly looking forward to ours continuing, Jason, and you know, some great things can be achieved. And if we move the needle, you know, each person just a little bit, the end result will be significant.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Ross.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Do you have the level of adaptability to survive and thrive the rapid changes ahead? Has your resilience got more comeback than a yo-yo? Do you have the ability to unlearn in order to reskill, upskill, and break through? Find out today and uncover your adaptability profile and score, your AQ. Visit aqai.io to gain your personalized report across 15 scientifically validated dimensions of adaptability. For a limited time, enter code PODCAST65 for a complimentary AQME assessment. AQAI. Transforming the way people, teams, and organizations navigate change. Thank you for listening to this episode of Decoding AQ. Please make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast directory, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please do leave a review, and be sure to tune in next time for more insights from our amazing guests.